Connected live. Catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.
What to watch
on Point of View.
It's 1 minute past nine and it is Thursday, which means we need to get you loaded up with some ideas of what to watch, not just over the weekend, over the coming months. I'm joined in studio this evening by Leroy Mark to guide us through our TV guide, essentially. How are you?
I'm fantastic. It's almost the weekend and, you know, after the week we've had, after the 19 weeks of January... Looking forward to winding down and watching something good.
I'm telling you, this was a very busy month for me, so I didn't feel the 19 weeks. But yes, I didn't have, because it was so busy, I didn't have enough time to get through. I'm just touching on Severance. Yeah. I'm just, film, I'm really excited about this. But I want to just say, your choices are deep. Do you want to talk about something?
No, you know what I try and do every week, Rufira, is I try and give us something that will be themed around particular shows because, as you know, after the writers' strike in the US, we had a lot of stuff coming out, some of it not so great, some of it, you know, getting quite good. So now we're able to have enough sort of material to be able to, okay, here's what we're dealing with right now. So if you look at the zeitgeist or sort of the trends of what's happening in the movies that are released, you can actually see a definite theme. So we're going back now to more the feel good movies. Yes. We're seeing more of the classic formulas, like, you know, the normal three act. Horrors where you know establish, then it gets to the middle, then you've got the climax at the end, and then the cliffhanger for the next episode or the next installment. So I try and sort of wade through all of that mess by having a theme that will guide us at least through the weekend.
Fabulous.
So we can have something a bit more, you know, cohesive to watch.
I'm also picking up a familial theme.
Yes.
So the Oppenheimer era and all of that, and Barbie and whatever, it was an icon time.
Yeah.
It kind of mirrored the Marvel era.
Yeah. Big budget.
Superhero. Big budget, but also almost unattainable dreams. And now it's back to like small story in your home, things that can happen.
Yep. Wow. And you see it because even the directors, you see how they now unearthing sort of old actors that we really love, right?
Yes.
So people like the Cameron Diaz's, and you just mentioned
that's
Kiki Palmer's and the Jamie Foxx's.
And that's a duo that we're used to.
Comfortable, rom-com, funny, can watch with the whole family, but, you know, new twists. So it is, you're quite right. We're having that very familial throwback to the movies we used to love.
Let's kick off with one that is icy cold. Presence.
So you know why I enjoyed Presence, right?
Because I'm excited for it and I hate horror.
So you and I both.
Okay.
I'm not a big horror fan, but what I love about it is when we use a formula like horror and not just to give me, you know, a scare a minute, because it really can become quite repetitive. But what they've done here is that you think the presence is the villain, right? You think the presence, this little disembodied situation that's haunting the halls of this home, is the boogeyman that you should be afraid of. And we find out that the presence, in fact, is less of the problem and there's something else happening in the house.
One step back. So just for background, it's a movie about a haunted home.
Yeah.
And a family living in a haunted home.
Yeah.
For the first time, we watch the entire movie from the perspective of the presence.
Exactly, which is very important because what you're expecting to happen is that the presence will become sort of the protagonist, right? To instigate all the happenings in the home. As you say, this family moves into this home because the son, Tyler, he's got this very, you know, raw talent. He's a swimmer.
Right.
And so the family moves into the home to be closer for him to be able to really establish that career.
Got you.
And we find that each of the family members have their own thing, right?
Mm.
And before we see even or feel the presence, we see this very weird relationship happening between the families, a very deep tension, because so, you know, we're not sure if Lucy Liu's, you know, day job is legit or it might be illegal. We're not sure what's going on there. We see that the daughter is having some sort of, you know, teenage issues, but quite deep-seated because there's loss involved in her in her experience, which I won't give away. And then we have Tyler the son, right? And then there's characters who around that.
Right.
So what you start seeing is that the presence itself is not the issue.
Yes.
The presence might actually be one of the companions that helped them navigate through those complexities of the family. It's absolutely riveting.
So Lucy, I'm really excited about it. First of all, it's highlighted as potentially the scariest movie of the year, but also probably one of the best.
Mm-hmm.
Lucy Liu plays the mum, and Chris Sullivan, who we know from This Is Us,
yes,
usually in a comedic sort of role,
yes,
is the dad. And I caught onto this movie when I saw a press run by Lucy Liu. And saw a clip or two, and I was like, sure, that's quite an intense dialogue there.
And remember, and this, what we're chatting about earlier on, right? Mm. So the familial, where you've got characters where I would never have cast Lucy Liu this deep into, like, hectic horror, especially with the underlying issues of, like, family and, you know, and lots of loss, where, again, Cameron Diaz, true to form, plays in a comedic, you know, action-packed thing where you go, yeah, I get it. It's fun. Mm. It's light. So I also enjoyed that she was being stretched, especially because not many American Asian actors get the opportunity to just play.
They don't. And you know, Michelle Yeoh, Lucy Liu, they're some of the pioneers, Jackie Chan, all of them. It's like, okay, if it's not going to be fighting a tiger, killing dragon, you know. Yeah. Okay, let's move on. Mm-hmm. Companion.
Companion. Okay.
Companion, just to give it back, it's a meet cute that finds this loving relationship between a lady called Iris and a gentleman called Josh. Mm-hmm. Then they were going away to a weekend trip with Josh's friends, and it's what's supposed to be a cabin in the woods, and it turns out to be the sprawling estate, but something kind of goes wrong. Now, I watched the trailer, and it opens by saying, so I don't think it's a spoiler, two happiest days of my life, the day I met Josh,
and the day I killed him.
And I was like, whoa.
I was so confused. Because when I watched it, I was like, okay, I see where this is going. Because again, goes to the whole formulaic thing. They're driving down, they go into this cabin. It's this couple, they meet, they're beautiful. Oh, love, you know, how great. And then you start realizing that not as all as it seems, especially with regard to Iris, right? Because again, without giving away too much, Iris comes wired differently, if that makes sense. And she learns how to break out of the parameters that she was manufactured into. I'll leave it at that. But it's absolutely riveting because, again, we've seen, like, for instance, with Meg 2, which is that sort of AI situation where, you know, self-learning, and then they turn against us here. Unbeknownst to Iris, she learns certain skills that she herself is even afraid of.
Right.
So it's that wonderful interplay about you know, what's real, what isn't real, and whether in the near future we should expect that you know beings of a different makeup.
That's right. Not necessarily a horror, more of a thriller, because it actually could be very, it's kind of actualized and a penny drop for those of us who maybe get a little too excited about our advancements in humanity without thinking about the unintended consequences.
Yeah, and I think what they did very well was to also give us the to run away from the desperation, right? Because what happens is that you find that the character who procures, and we're being very vague for, you know, not to spoil it, but they get to this relationship with this character, like an Iris, and then it's always like, ach, shame, you know, he's a nerd who couldn't get a date. But here, we're definitely seeing that there's actually, like, deep emotions happening in there. But it's like a lot of dark humor. Like, a lot of dark humor.
It looks like it's going to be hilarious. I mean, it's going to be brilliant, hilarious, but mind-bending.
I snorted at some point because I was so surprised at the absurdity of the scene, right?
Snorted with laughter, people. Snorted
with laughter. Because it was just so extreme. Yes. So yes, absolutely. Coming out tomorrow in theatres.
Oh, is it tomorrow? Yes. Fantastic. And then Green and Gold. Now this, when you say formulaic, heartfelt family, this feels like a warm fuzzy on a cold night.
And it's so funny because Green and Gold is usually, you know,
associated with
South
rugby.
African rugby.
Exactly.
But again, that's why I like the parallel, because it is around the patriotism around you know, your favorite football, in this case, football team. But again, it's about this interplay that happens between betting and sport, and how I think Hollywood is trying to now merge certain elements that they know will give you a feel good. I've often said that you can see that the PR of Brand USA has really gone down the bin because of what's happening over, you know, the last 3 weeks.
And Hollywood's trying to kind of bring it back up. I actually saw one of the sponsoring companies of this particular film looks like some, like, Help Farmers of America or something like that, because it's about a foreclosing farm.
It's a true story where the daughter herself, so this is a story about a gentleman who is a farmer, a dairy farmer. He's in, like, rural America, and and he's missed a few payments, and obviously they're coming to foreclose on the farm. But here's the interesting thing, right? That his beloved Green and Gold team is playing. And so by some lack of the draw or stroke of luck, the guy who's coming to foreclose on the farm says, here's a wager. Let's find a way to get you out of this little hill.
Right.
In the meantime, there's a parallel story where the daughter is out to go find herself.
And betting on herself.
Correct. And also then the tension between the two, because her dad still seems to think that, you know, she ought to be running the family dynasty.
But she just wants to be a singer.
And she wants to take a chance and win a prize. For me, that was what I really loved about it, that it was more than just wanting to save the family, but it was more also, but I need to save myself first, you know.
That's right.
Can't pour out of a cup that's empty.
Finding oneself, the little guy, literally betting the farm on it all. Those are some of the notes I wrote down when I was watching it. Brave the Dark, based on a true story as well.
Yes, very, very similar in the feelings it invokes, right? But for me, this was so amazing because it's a story around how kids in school really need the teacher to almost root for them. And it was almost a selfish choice because I was literally thrown back to my English teacher who helped me get my first scholarship, right? Who, when teachers and adults generally, you know, believe in the kids in their care, amazing things can happen. The story here is about a boy who's completely wayward. He's losing his way. He's actually being a rebel without a cause. And this one teacher who takes a chance on him and really goes far in bringing him into the fold and looking after him and making sure that his life becomes more than what it could have been.
And to your point, we call the kid wayward. We call them, and I think this is a good one for South Africa and actually to South Africans to watch, teachers and learners and parents. We are calling the kid wayward, a rebel without a cause. And I think the more you dig into the movie and the more you will dig into any student in your class who is that way, a lot of it happened to them. You know, and it's not what's wrong with you, it's what happened to you. Oprah often says that about the girls at her leadership academy. And this teacher is saying, doesn't every kid, even the one struggling, especially the one struggling, need someone to support them and not be like, oh, there you go again. And he seems, it looks from the trailer, like they're going to come across a lot of pushback and it's not going to be an easy road. But I'm praying Hollywood does its thing and it just ends up with a tied in a bow with a happy ending.
So the ending for me was, the word I would use, I wouldn't use the word happy, but it's fulfilling. Because you, as you say, completely, you know, we all have histories, all have pasts. Many of us have parts of it we want to forget. But what I enjoyed very much about it was you get these moments, and it's a tactic they use or a device they use where they give us his frame in the current day and then we flash back to him as a kid but in the same sort of setting. And you see these very older and elderly or adult emotions on this young child, and they've used the use of AI to do that. So you know when you purse your lips and you push your neck back, when you like almost like the face version of he has that moment where he's terrified and he has that eek moment of fear, and they snap right back to him as a kid. I think might have been like two having the very same, and that's the moment you start seeing the connection between the young and the old. And it goes to what you're saying, that you know it had to come from somewhere. And now we're just watching it play out in an adult body, and now we can the consequences. What I loved about it also was that it gave us light and shade all the time.
Nice.
I didn't know if I liked him or disliked him.
Good. That's human. That's human.
So annoying. Why is he doing this? And then you just go, I get it. And then and I love that they were being complicated, because Hollywood can be quite monolithic if they want to. So that's playing now in theaters, called Brave the Dark.
Fantastic. Finally, not a film, but a play. A remake of a play actually first performed in 1986 at the Market Theatre and based, I believe, on the book by Gunam Shoke. Have you seen Zandile? Starting in April. Very excited.
Starting in April. So what we try and do is to, you know, profile South African plays in the various theatres that we have. And I always found that the Market's my favourite theatre, but the Soweto Theatre has been doing a lot to take theatre straight into the township. Stories that are very idiosyncratic to that setting. Where you start seeing characters that look and sound like me, that I can imagine what it looks like for Zandile to go home in KZN and then be uprooted from KZN by her mom, who's essentially a migrant worker herself, and say, okay, I want you to come and live with me.
So you have to leave Ugogo.
And Ugogo's my safe place, right? Who doesn't remember Gogo with loving eyes?
In fact, Ugogo is who I call Uma.
Uma.
And often Uma is who I call by her first name.
Yes. Or Sisbani. Yeah, well, Sisjabu, because that's who she is. but my granny. And for me, I was, if you know, even just in looking at the work and reading the story again, the heaviness of almost wanting to fix what's going on, because almost want to preempt and say, don't move her, you don't know what you're doing, you think you're doing it right, and understanding also that the mother has a very deep character to play. So I'm absolutely looking forward to it. It's called Have You Seen Zandile? Quite rightly said by Yuri Fili that it's based on a true life, on a play by Umamthi Namhlophe. It is at the Theatre Theatre all the way through April, so please, tickets to go watch it available on the website.
So much to watch. So grateful it's being filmed. But for a quick wrap up, that's Presence,
yes,
Companion, Green and Gold, Brave the Dark, and Have You Seen Zandile? Leroy Mark, it's been such a pleasure.
Thank you so much.
I'm so ready, indeed.
If you missed it live, catch the podcast on kaya959.co.za.